Welcome to the program for Thursday, December 20th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, as every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour, it is Industry Chatter, and I'm happy to welcome to the program today the President and Chief Executive Officer of Burdashaw Associates, Marv Samber. Marv, it's a pleasure to see you. Thanks for coming in today.
You're welcome. Pleasure to be here.
Well, let's start where we always do with telling me what your company does for the clients that you work with, some inside and some outside government.
Well, Francis, in the spirit of the holidays, let me thank you for starting with a softball question.
That's my gift to you this holiday season, Marv.
Gift, yeah, hopefully you'll give me a few more gifts during this this hour or so. Well, we consider ourselves to be the premier consulting firm in the defense and government industry. We have over 700 of top-notch associates who have expertise in understanding military requirements, understanding at the very highest level acquisition decisions at the DOD, Homeland Security. We have expertise in the sciences. We have the head of DARPA as one of our associates. And primarily, we give advice and understanding to members of industry to help them succeed in their government business.
How has the trend of the kind of information and advice that they're looking for changed in the past year and maybe the past 5 years, Marv?
Well, in the past year, obviously, the issue has been affordability. So the key thrust within the Department of Defense is affordability. And that's been interpreted to mean lowest cost and to make sure that your particular system that you're advocating for the military really does the job and at the lowest possible cost. So our business now is focused on making sure that when our customers offer responses in their RFP responses, that they consider cost as a main driver. And that's been different than in the last 5 years. The last 5 years, the emphasis is maintaining our defense capabilities at the highest possible level. Now affordability means just meet the requirements. It used to be we want to be number one. The United States defense should be the best. And now that theme of being the best is sort of softened to affordability and meeting just the requirements.
Has it been hard, do you think, for your clients and then for the government as a result to find that balance, what the right balance is between that desire to have the best and provide the warfighter with the best possible products and services, and then the other side of that balance is we got to get the best deal on the stuff that we can?
Well, you know, the problem is that in previous procurements, the aspect of best value was always a key determining factor in who wins. Now that aspect of best value is very difficult for people to come to grips with, especially within the services, because there is a fallback position that best value really means lowest cost. So there is a challenge to figure out what is the meaning of best value in this framework of fiscal uncertainty.
There are a number of people that I've talked to who've said essentially the best value has now become lowest price, and that procurements that appear to be or explicitly say that their best value procurements actually turn out to be LPTAs in the
Well, Francis, you're exactly right, because best value, as I said before, is so difficult to measure. And that's why when somebody responds for a request for a proposal, you have to make sure that you put in your proposal the measures that enable the evaluators to really determine that this is best value. Because best value has such a wide scope of meaning. Does it mean the lightest? Does it mean the quickest? Does it mean the best stealth? What does it exactly mean? And what is it interpreted in terms of value to the Department of Defense? Whereas cost is so easy to compare. Mm-hmm. You know?
Well, and you talk about some factors there that are not explicitly related to price or cost, but even within just the financial realm of it, it's my understanding, and maybe you can tell me if this is something that you're seeing, is that even when it comes to dollars, costs like life cycle costs are not necessarily even being considered up front. That it really is, what's the cheapest way for me to get this deal done today, and we'll worry about the rest of this stuff when we have to worry about it down the road.
Francis, again, you're exactly right, because we have budgets right now. It's like any normal person. You have a budget. You have to consider what you can afford today. You can't really think about, well, if I buy a more efficient furnace 5 years down the road, I'll be paying less. So the concept of life cycle cost, first of all, is not believable by many people because it's difficult to measure because there's so many assumptions built into life cycle costs. And the only reality is today's budget. And, you know, the budgets in the out years are difficult to predict what they will be, and therefore life cycle cost is given less weight than what the actual procurement cost is in today's.
Yeah, and the point that you make, I think, is really good about being able to ascertain what the life cycle is. One thing to write it in a proposal. It's another thing to actually realize that 10 or 20 or 30 years down the road on a major weapon system.
Exactly, because most of that life cycle cost is based upon assumptions. Let's say, for example, you buy a car and you're assuming that the price of gasoline is X, Y, or Z, and then you calculate that based upon maybe some inflation rate. Well, if the inflation rate changes by 1% less over a 10, 20-year period, that's a huge amount of money. So you're basing the estimate of life cycle costs on a lot of assumptions that are very sensitive to what the ultimate life cycle cost will be. And that's why the life cycle cost has less meaning than near-term dollars that you're actually going to put out.
The idea of costs and the types of contracts and all of that are very fluid right now, obviously, because of where we are, fiscal cliff and sequestration,
right,
all of that stuff. At some point, is it fair to assume that that will change, that will harden, some of these things will harden, some of the uncertainty will go away? Or do you think we're in kind of a new normal where this is how it's going to be for the foreseeable future?
Well, I think every 20 years people claim we're in a new normal. If you look at these things, they're cyclical. So this is the new normal for the next couple of years, and then there'll be another new normal coming out. Right now we're faced with a fiscal crisis, but that's been the history of events every 20 or so years. We have that, or a change in who the enemy is. The Cold War ends, or terrorism ends, or what have you. There are always things that make a new normal last a very short period of time.
Well, and I guess why it's good to hear that is because I think we get fixated on whatever the current crisis du jour is, and forget that from a historical perspective that maybe there has never been such a thing as a normal, that the times that we're in dictate whatever the appropriate procedures are.
Exactly. I think human beings have a very short memory.
My guest today on Industry Chatter is Marv Sambre. He's the President and Chief Executive Officer of Burdashaw & Associates, and we'll continue our conversation in a minute on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to transform how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show When Crowd Meets Cloud, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
"What we're doing now is it's just another progression of using not just the web now, but the cloud to tap into a much even, you know, broader resource pool of individuals and expertise, because in many cases now we're finding that the expertise, even in your own narrowly defined field, like it could be oil exploration or it could be Java development, you're finding that there are folks all over the world that you never would have been able to bring to your event or even invite them to your phone call before."
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Change is certain and the future inevitable. SAIC is ready. We're moving forward to meet the future head on, striving to keep it secure. Secure for our family's health by leveraging technology to enhance patient care. Secure for our communities by helping make energy cleaner and more reliable. Secure for our world by helping protect freedom. SAIC, securing the future. Learn more at saic.com/securing the future.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m. By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Friday's Federal Drive. Sequestration or not, the government will still spend hundreds of millions of dollars next year buying things. We'll get an expert view on how the acquisition climate is shaping up for 2013. Plus, Christmas Eve is getting closer, and NORAD's 57-year tradition of tracking Santa has gotten to be quite a big affair. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest today on Industry Chatter is Marv Samber. He is President, Chief Executive Officer of Bertishaw Associates. And you and I were talking before we went on the air, Marv, and you said there are two big challenges that that the industrial base is up against and the Defense Department is up against. Outline those two for me, and I'd like to dig into those a little
bit.
Well,
the first big challenge is the fact that the budgets are going down. The defense budget is going down. And as we talked at lunch, and I think I'm going to quote you at lunch rather than at the commercial break. This was such a stimulating conversation, I forgot it was a commercial break, that you correctly pointed out that even with these reductions, the pie, the defense budget, is still big. And yet people are cowering from this fiscal uncertainty and basically letting go of people, reducing staff. You know, we're in the consulting business. We're the first people to go. That's one of our challenges, the biggest challenge. But yet there's still a lot of money to be spent, and people can't go into a state of suspended animation. They have to go forward. And, you know, also, as we discussed earlier, in times like this, when people are fearful, this is the time to take action and become profitable.
Mm-hmm.
This is the time when people can really succeed. And during these financial crises, people find ways to actually come out of it and come out of it stronger than ever before, not by, you know, cowering under the bed, but actually going forward and taking bold steps.
Now, you said that the defense budget is going down. I think most people see that to be the case. But there were holdouts even fairly recently where people thought, well, this is just a bump in the road. This is just going to be a little bit of a thing because, you know, technically this is different. And I'm just saying this is what people are trying to, people are trying to convince themselves. We're not actually operating in combat in Iraq and Afghanistan, but the war on terror continues because we don't know when somebody might threaten us again or where there might be other problems around the world. And so this is just a temporary thing, a year or two, and we'll be back to normal. And we talked in the first part of our conversation about the new normal. But I wonder if there still is, if there really is a sense universally throughout the defense industrial base that budgets are going to go down, and they're going to go down not just this year and next year and the year after, but for the foreseeable future, that we're just kind of in a different place budget-wise now.
Well, I think, Francis, there is a difference here from previous, and that is the fact that our debt is so large. I mean, if you look at how we need to pay off that debt, you know, as the president is trying to do right now, it's a combination of reducing spending and increased taxes. And this debt problem is not going to go away in 2-3 years. It's going to be a long-term situation. And people are evaluating what we need to maintain the defense of this country. And that's an ongoing debate. And where we will put our energies and our money, I've been advocating the fact, to me, one of the biggest risks that we face as a nation is really the cyber situation. I mean, we all use online banking now. That's the new normal. People, you know, very rarely send checks out anymore. And I don't know how many people are fearful of getting their password stolen or their bank accounts, but it's a real issue. And that is one of the biggest threats to our nation. So obviously those areas are going to be built up, and other areas that may not be as needed, you know, tanks may not be the thing of the future and spending in that area. So we have to rebalance the budget in terms of the realities of the fiscal situation and the realities of the new technologies and where the threats will be coming in the future.
As you look at those kinds of changes, do you anticipate a dramatic change in the landscape of the defense industrial base this year and 2014 and maybe beyond as companies try to figure out where the money will go and then follow it?
Well, I don't think it'll be a dramatic change in the landscape. We have a tremendous amount of inertia in our budgets and in the programs that we're funding. But there will have to be a change, and there has to be what I think is really important, a collaborative effort between industry and the Defense Department. Right now, there has been too much of a, you know, arm's length distance. And in order to make sure that we have the right approaches that are best for this country, it needs to be collaborative. There needs to be an understanding of what technologies are available. There needs to be an understanding of what's the art of the possible, an understanding of where the real threats are coming from. So that can only be done with collaboration. The best decisions are with collaboration. And right now, because of you know, the, and I'm going to bring this word up, of trust. There's a lack of trust between industry and government. And, you know, and that's found in so many ways that are really unhealthy for us. There are many, many levels of bureaucracy, specifically as checks and balances, that we spend lots of money on because of this issue of trust. And getting rid of those and allowing some more free dialogue, because people are concerned if you have dialogue, you erode competition and all sorts of nasty consequences. But at the end of the day, without true collaboration, without true trust, you know, we're going to be in a very difficult situation for a long, long period of time.
Is that trust issue what's driving that arm's length relationship that you talked about a little bit ago?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Trust is on both sides, on both sides of the coin. I think the government doesn't trust being able to speak to anybody about what their needs are, because they we accused of talking to somebody instead of talking to somebody else. And industry is afraid to tell the government what they really have, because then they're afraid the government will tell other competitors what they really have and will lose their intellectual property advantages. So this lack of trust is really a big source of waste.
With as much money as is at stake, though, in all of these various issues, how do you get around that? Because somebody's got to be the first person or company to say, we just have to get past this. We have to be altruistic and make the first move, and then have the confidence that everybody else is going to follow them.
Well, Francis, that's a really difficult question, and I think it has to be done on both sides. It's a little bit like saying to somebody else, on the count of three, let's lay down our arms. We'll come and shake hands. I mean, there has to be, and I think the government has to start it. I think the government has to start a spirit of cooperation that'll lead to better equipment, less costly, and a better organizational domain for both the DOD and for industry, because we could cut down on a lot of layers of waste if we can just assume a level of trust.
Now, are you talking then also about the types of systems and the types of procurements, or just the way that they're executed?
I think it's a combination of both. For instance, it's totally both. It's not only the types of things we buy, it's the types of things, how we buy it. You know, for example, each service has their own acquisition executive, and on top of that, there's an OSD layer. I mean, do we need all of that? I mean, there's so much duplication. Each has a contracting department, finance department. I mean, do we need three different ones and then an OSD level above that? Do we have really stopped the fact that all of the services build similar things? Why can't we work together? I mean, there are joint programs, but I think that could be taken to another level.
That's actually what I was going to ask you about when we come back from the break, is talk more about jointness and what it can mean as a result of the budget situation that we're in. We'll continue that conversation in a minute. Marv Sambur is my guest. He's President, Chief Executive Officer of Bertishaw Associates, on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back. Frank Konieczny, Chief Technology Officer of the U.S. Air Force, on the Federal Executive Forum on Defense Cloud Computing, Progress and Best Practices, sponsored by HP.
The question is, how are we going to extend everything to the tactical environment in a way that makes sense? You know, we talk about terrestrial a lot. Well, the Air Force has lots of other things that are not terrestrial. Right. So there has to be more thought as to what security architecture will be extended into the satellite domain, into the air domain at the same time.
Right.
To listen to the whole program made possible by the Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
No doubt cloud's promise is appealing. Wary about the return on investments, risks, and governance? Let the experience of HP guide you to cost-effective, secure technology solutions. Cloud solutions can now be purchased by all military services and federal agencies through the Army Private Cloud APC-2 contract vehicle. Open up new ways to source, deliver, and govern highly scalable and flexible services. Make cloud a viable option for mission-critical needs through APC-2. Visit hp.com/enterprise/gov/APC2.
MEADS, the Medium Extended Air Defense System, has passed its most important test yet. Recently, MEADS executed the first ever over-the-shoulder engagement of an air-breathing target at White Sands Missile Range. The test demonstrated the unprecedented 360-degree capability of the advanced lightweight and expeditionary MEADS system. Only MEADS can defend our warfighters against air and missile defense threats from any direction. MEADS has advanced capabilities and reliability that legacy systems can't provide. MEADS 360-degree coverage defends 8 times the area with less equipment than the Patriot system, and unmatched lethality. Defending more, costing less. MEADS, delivering on its promises. For more information, go to MEADS-AMD.com. That's MEADS-AMD.com.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Black risk of heart death. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Researchers say black men and women have double white's risk of dying of coronary heart disease, which is a narrowing of the small blood vessels that supply blood and oxygen to the heart. At the University of Alabama at Birmingham, Monica Safford found this in data on about 24,000 people nationwide who were followed for, on average, about 4 years. She says the common causes are the same for blacks and whites.
High blood pressure, diabetes, high cholesterol, these are the things that have very long-standing reputation for being associated with heart attack. And the overall risk burden in blacks is quite a bit higher than it is in whites.
The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Really? One website to find all government and military events happening in our area?
It's about time. Why didn't I think of that?
I know. With GovEvents.com, it's so easy to find government and military-related events happening near me and around the world. I can search by keyword, date, location, live events versus webcasts, and so much more. And best of all, it's completely free.
Seriously? I can't believe I haven't heard of this site before. What is it again?
It's GovEvents.com, the best place to find government events that matter to you, near you.
Back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with Marv Samber. He is the President, Chief Executive Officer of Birdshaw Associates. And some of the things that we've been talking about, the pretty common themes throughout the course of the hour, but one of the things that we talked about at the beginning I want to expand on a little bit, and that is the concept that January 2nd comes and goes, whether sequestration is fixed or not. We've talked about the financial challenges and so on. But there's I'm starting to hear some buzz, and you alluded to it a little bit already, and this is what I want to dig into. Potentially, this could be an opportunity for a company or companies to really reshape the way that they're doing business and really represent themselves to the federal government in general and the Defense Department in particular, if what I'm hearing you, if I'm understanding right, what right, you're saying. Right. Am I on the right track there, Mark?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Tell me about the steps that I don't want you to give away all your business
right,
secrets,
sure.
But start me through a couple of the steps that I should be taking if I'm leading a company like that that's thinking, you know what, this is a good time. I'm going to take them up on that advice.
Well, Francis, I think there are two areas that people in this business take advantage of. We mentioned affordability. So if you have a system that can replace a legacy system that offers greater affordability, I think that by going and stating your case as to why your alternative system makes sense because of the new affordability dictates in the building, you need to bring that forward and not, you know, sit in the background right now. And because a lot of people right now are concerned about keeping their programs sold, so to speak, which gives opportunities for people to come in and unsell your program by, you know, giving affordability arguments. In addition, if you have the capability to bring in systems that integrate more than one system at a time, you know, for example, the ISR, the Intelligence, Surveillance, and Reconnaissance is a big subject right now. And there's such a host of information coming. So if you can offer a solution that basically integrates several of these ISR receptors, sensors or what have you, into one system that's integrates all of these things seamlessly, then you have a winner because you've gotten affordability, you've gotten greater capability all in one. So companies should look in terms of taking advantage of this affordability thrust to bring forward their systems that really come to grips with that. In addition, if you want to be really bold, there's lots of companies right now that are getting out of defense because they think defense is financially not going to be as great a winner. So there are opportunities for people to acquire. So I would say if you're in the mode for acquiring, if you have the capital resources, there are lots of things out there that you can analyze to give you synergy, to give you greater competitive advantages and synergy that not only brings you competitive advantages but gives you affordability and also enables you to get into the international domain, which is becoming a big thrust for lots of companies. So I think if you're bold and you're willing to step out of your comfort zone, and you can succeed.
And if you need it, money's never going to be cheaper than it is today.
Absolutely. This is a great time. And a lot of companies have been basically keeping a lot of cash because of this uncertain time. And, you know, as we spoke in the break, you know, cash is not getting a lot of interest. If you put it in government securities, you're almost paying the government to keep your money safe. So there are big opportunities out there.
Take my money, please.
Yeah,
the old variation on the old Henny Youngman joke. It sounds like the thread that's running through a couple of those ideas there that you talked about are – Be proactive. Don't wait for an RFP necessarily. Right. If you've got a solution, you can make your own RFP from the sound of it.
Well, I think and I know this is true, that the building is very serious about affordability. Affordability is something that is a tremendously persuasive argument. But in addition to that argument, you have to be able to couple it with the fact that you can meet the requirements and whatever you do poses very little risk. So if you're trying to replace a legacy system, while you're replacing it, you have to make sure that that capability is still there. You have a programmatic point of view that reduces risk and gives schedules that are meaningful to keep the services in operation for those needs.
Maybe I misunderstood you, but you made it sound like a lot of companies are so focused on keeping the business that they have, keeping their system sold, that they're not as much focused as you think they should be on figuring out new ways to attract new business. Did I mishear you, or is that your observation?
Well, no, that's true, because keeping a program sold is a number one priority. You
sure.
already have that program.
Yes, and it certainly is easier to keep a customer than find a new one. I understand that.
Yeah, but by the same token, people should also be putting on the hat saying, okay, is this an opportunity? We've been trying to sell this particular system. It hasn't resonated, but now there is a feeling in the building that we have to do something to reduce cost. Now you have an argument that people can say, yeah, I'll listen to you. Before, they could say, look, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Now they have to say, well, it ain't broke, but it's costing me a lot to maintain it, and it's not giving me everything I want. So you can go back and dispel if it ain't broke. Well, it is broke. It's mm-hmm. costing you too much.
I guess the mental picture that I had was of somebody hanging on to the edge of the cliff so tight, hanging on to what they already have, that they weren't inclined to maybe try to make a move to the left or right to get themselves in a better position.
I think, for instance, people think that it takes money to get yourself into a better position, whereas keeping sold is something, you know, it's like protecting your baby mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, doing something else. So being proactive is more of a challenge than sitting back and saying, we're depending upon System X for a certain degree of financial profitability. We have to maintain that, as opposed to the other class saying, well, let's spend some money to see if we can attack somebody else's system Y.
Mm-hmm. I imagine, though, that since it's a riskier approach, it's probably also a potentially more lucrative approach. I mean, if you're just going to concentrate for the time being on hanging on to what you have, then what you have is what you're going to have. And in a time of shrinking budgets, I'm not sure I necessarily want to continue to just have what I have.
Exactly right. And the odds are pretty great that what you have is, if people are being proactive, they're attacking it, mm-hmm. whether it's other industries or people within the building themselves. I mean, lots of people are proponents of other solutions.
Marv Samber is my guest. He's the president, chief executive officer of Bertishaw Associates. My guest today on Industry Chatter. We'll continue our conversation in a minute. This is Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
How's the new car research going?
Definitely need a new car with HD radio technology. iTunes tagging, artist experience, HD2, HD3 channels, plus the digital sound is crazy.
Cool. What brands?
I went to HDradio.com. Scion, Kia, Volkswagen, even the new Ford Shelby comes with factory-installed HD radio technology.
Sweet. So what's next?
Dealerships. We're going to test drive HD radio technology.
Let's roll.
HD radio. Now available from 28 different automobile brands and more than 150 vehicles. Go to HDradio.com for more.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Who are the top leaders in the federal government? Federal News Radio wants to know who has inspired you and what qualities do you think make a great leader? Nominate someone today. A top leader can be someone who knows how to motivate a team to success or a mentor to younger coworkers. A top leader can be anyone. You tell us. Nominations will be accepted through January 8th, and finalists will be announced as part of a Federal News Radio special report in February. Find the nomination form at federalnewsradio.com. Search Top Leaders.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
Kim Weaver's Director of External Affairs at the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board.
More and more plan sponsors are offering target date funds, life cycle funds, so that participants who feel undereducated in terms of their asset allocation can simply pick the fund that matches when they think they'll need the money, and they can put their money in and largely forget about it, and we rebalance for them.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with Marv Samber, President Chief Executive Officer of Burdashaw Associates. At the beginning of the program, Marv, you talked a little bit about the kinds of people that you work with your clients and work with the Defense Department. What is that landscape like? What's the talent acquisition landscape like right now?
Actually, it's pretty good because a lot of people who are coming out of the military who have real understanding of what's needed are having a difficult time getting jobs in industry. So they are basically coming to us. You know, we're in the consulting business, and they've come to us. So the talent pool is great. Most of the industries are not taking advantage of that talent pool because they're in, as we've talked about before, they're in this sheltered mode where they don't want to hire new people. They want to basically shrink in size to protect themselves from this, and I'll use the word, eventual downturn. And there are lots of people who are now available that we would have never thought would have been available several years ago, who are now available with tremendous insight, tremendous understanding of what things are going on in the business.
How do you avoid the appearance that you have people, the revolving door syndrome, right, that we've had in this town for who knows how long, or people have said at least is in this town for a long time?
Well, you know, unfortunately, you can't avoid that appearance. All you can do is make people understand the fact that this collaboration that I talked about before, where industry has to understand the real things that the military is looking for. Without that understanding, you can't get the best products. You can't be pointed in the right direction. This is not, you know, a blind man's game where you put on a mask and you hope you're doing what your customer wants. So by having people who have come out of the services, it's not an opportunity for you to have an old boys network. It's an opportunity for you to gain insight and true understanding. And by having true understanding and insight, you can build better products and build things that are really needed at the lowest possible cost. So I think this is a tremendous plus for this country.
Is that a two-way street, too? Because I think the understanding, the way people understand that relationship is that the former military leaders go back to DOD and say, this is why you should work with this company, where I would think if I were the company, I would want the expertise of that person also to be able to say, in some cases, well, no, what you're trying to develop is not possible or not practical or whatever. So it's that information's going both ways.
Absolutely.
Is that right?
It has to go both ways. And that's why also in building, it's advantageous to have people who are decision makers who understand the issues of industry. And again, there's an unfortunate issue of trust that people think that if you come from industry and you work for company XYZ, you're going to be favoring XYZ. No, you've come and taken an oath and you've given up a lot of pay to work within the government, and you want to do the best job for this country possible. And you're bringing your expertise and understanding to make a much more efficient DOD that, you know, can really make this company safe.
The exchange of information, we've talked about it on and off throughout the course of the program, as far as what companies and the Pentagon can do to understand each other better. We've talked about on this program the Mythbusters campaign that Dan Gordon instituted when he was at the Office of Federal Procurement Policy to really delineate, here are the lines, this is what you can do and this is what you can't do, and unless you specifically are not allowed to do something when it comes to that collaborative relationship, you're allowed to do it. Are you seeing that bearing any fruit? Is the trend in that trust, in that collaborative relationship, in the right direction, or is it kind of stuck in the mud, or is it maybe even regressing a little bit?
My view is I think it's stuck in the mud, and you see that from some of the conferences like AUSA, where the military leadership put a quota on how many people could attend these things, and I think at the highest levels, there is still an aura of trust. And, you know, unfortunately, you'd make one mistake and then it's characterized that millions of people have those problems. You know, I worked as the assistant secretary for acquisition for the Air Force, and I will tell you unequivocally, the people I work with were the hardest workers, the most ethical people you could ever imagine. They worked, you know, people were in the office at 5 and didn't leave till 8 o'clock at night. And everybody was dedicated to do the job well. And there's no issues that anybody would ever compromise anything. And, you know, of course you have bad apples in every bunch. But this issue of trust is so important, and this issue of collaboration is so important that we have to find a balance that makes people happy. And we tend to make the balance in a very draconian fashion.
We've talked about the current situation that we're in, and we've projected into the future a little bit. And I know it's really hard, given the level of uncertainty that we have, to predict the future. I'm not going to ask you to do that. But just based on your experience and the trends that you're seeing now, let's talk when we come back from the break. Let's wrap up with a little bit of what you might expect for us to talk about if we have this conversation again 2 years from now or 5 years from now. Marv Sambers, my guest. He's the President, Chief Executive Officer of Burdashaw Associates, on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be right back.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Astrium Services Government Incorporated is the newest name in satellite communications and the only provider of both CompSatCom and MilSatCom systems to the U.S. government. Part of the EADS North America team, Astrium Services Government will soon double X-band and UHF capacity available with the coming launch of two new Skynet satellites. U.S. government customers rely on them for flexible end-to-end SATCOMs using GSA's FCSA contract vehicles. Visit AstriumAmericas.com for more information.
You're dedicated to your agency's mission. And at Federal News Radio, we're dedicated to making that mission easier. We give you access to the people, policy, and programs that affect you every day from the voices that matter most. Hear for yourself. DoD Deputy CIO Rob Carey.
5 years ago, senior leaders weren't necessarily too terribly concerned about this IT, cyber. Now it is buried in their lexicon. They understand it. They grasp it. They understand its implications.
OMB controller Danny Werfel.
We create a risk report that tells the agency you have a risk that one of the entities that you're doing business with is actually on this excluded party list and you should investigate further. This is technology that gets the agency smarter, and that can be a real game changer, helping us battle the issue of improper payments.
In your car, online, on the go on your mobile device, Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
If you raise high the buff in blue, now's your chance to win prizes for showing your commitment to the Colonials. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now and start earning points for your likes, retweets, shares, check-ins, and more with GW Athletics content from GWSports.com and social media properties. Registration is free, and you can win special fan experiences, ticket upgrades, and buff in blue gear. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Marv Sambers, my guest. He's President and Chief Executive Officer of Burdashaw Associates on Industry Chatter today. I'm going to, we talked about just a moment ago what you would like to see, where you would like us to be 2 to 5 years from now if you and I have this conversation again, but we'll reshape that a little bit differently. We're going to put the crown on your head, and you're going to be the king of the Pentagon now, Marv, and you're going to be able to make decisions in that manner. What do you think are some of the things that we would see differently than we see today if that were the scenario?
Well, first of all, thank you for that promotion. Do I get a ring with this?
I'm not empowered to be able to give you a ring.
Okay, Francis.
I can give you a really tall hat.
That would be, yeah, like Abe.
That's right.
I think the first thing that I would do it would be to put one acquisition organization in place. I think there's significant redundancy among the various acquisition services, you know, same contracting functions, same financial functions, and I think we could significantly reduce a lot of cost. I'm not quite sure of having a layer above that with the OSD. I would have removed that layer and have one big acquisition serving all of the services. There would be an Air Force, there would be a Navy, but that would be specifically with respect to the requirement generation and things of that nature. But we would have a professional group of program managers. Right now, one of the big problems we have is that program managers change so frequently, and there is no stability, no continuity in terms of the management of these organizations. And I would allow for having two different areas for promotion. Just like in industry, there's a technical and there is a managerial level. I think in the services, we should have two levels for promotions, one within the acquisition and technical domain and the other in the warfighter domain, because a lot of people who are very, very good technically and within acquisition, they reach a ceiling and they're forced to retire. And we lose a lot of good people because of that type of requirement. So I would get rid of some of these rules that don't really allow us to keep talent, get rid of these rules that foster redundancy in the various acquisition things. I would also have a collaboration within the test group right now. Testing is supposed to be independent of development. I think testing and development have to be done hand in hand. Too frequently we find problems way after the thing has been fielded, and then we have to retrofit and we have all sorts of issues. So I think there should be, instead of arm's length distance, I think testing should be part and parcel of the development phase as you go along. Of course, at the end there should be an independent testing, but the testing should be done as we go along. So I would encourage all of these things that give you a sense of cooperation. I would encourage industry to basically comment on these requirements before they come in place so that we know what the art of the possible is. And I would institute various degrees of processes. Instead of right now, the building is run by policies, which every time a new leader comes in, the policy changes. So instead of having policies, I would have institutionalized processes that basically tell you how things are done and give leadership checklists so that they know how well these processes are being adhered to, because I think policies don't really mean too much.
You talked about commenting on requirements and so on. I'm imagining a scenario where if that infrastructure existed and it was encouraged, there would still be apprehension on the part of the companies for a reason you mentioned earlier, and that is I don't want to give anything away, give anybody else, any of my competitors, the idea that I might have something that they don't and cause them to go in a particular direction that I'm going to try to claim an exclusive on for right now.
Well, I think there are ways of doing this. There could be firewalls put up between the various companies that these people cannot be involved in the bidding process, or we can have rotational types of things. But whenever you do something, when you basically want to finish your basement or paint your house, you bring in a couple of people who you say, look, this is what I want to do. What's the art of the possible? And they'll say, well, if you don't want to have this beam here, it's going to cost you $50,000 less. But I want the beam there. Okay, if you want the beam, it's $50,000. But we could put something in place that looks just as nice. It's going to that type of dialogue between the people who are developing these things and the people who are making the requirements doesn't happen. So that leads to a lot of things that can't be done, because at the end of the day, the requirements are put in place and people say, yes, sir, two books full. And then as you go along, you find out you can't do the requirements. They change the requirements. And then in the industry, we use the word ka-ching. These are engineering change proposals that cost the government money because they're changing things. And that's a vicious cycle. I think, you know, there are ways to sit down with industry and attack this question of how do you allow industry to be candid and give you comments without basically jeopardizing their intellectual property or jeopardizing the competitive nature of that. That's a dialogue that can be had. But the rewards for this country are significant. You get better products at lower cost and sooner.
And sooner is the issue in kind of underlying all of this that we haven't had a chance to talk about today, and we won't, unfortunately, because we're out of time, but it would be great to have you come back at some point.
Anytime, Francis.
And continue this dialogue. Thanks very much for your time today, Marv.
Pleasure.
I've enjoyed
being
our
here.
Conversation. Dr. Marv Samber is President, Chief Executive Officer of Burdashaw Associates on Industry Chatter today. This conversation archived later today at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose coming in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.